This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the U.S. Lens. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders North America, and we're here to talk about a certain part of the world that has not only suffered under COVID-19, but has also struggled over the last 40 decades to find its way economically as the rest of the world has progressed. Joining me now to talk about Latin America and how COVID-19 has affected it, and whether or not this will be yet another restraint and constraint on growth in that part of the world, is Fernando Grisales. He's Senior Portfolio Manager of EMD Americas and joins us now to talk about that. Fernando, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hello, Ron. Pleasure to be here.
And let's just start with COVID-19 itself. There have been, over the last 40 years or so, a wide variety of missteps in Latin America that have constrained economic growth. How serious is the pandemic in that regard?
Thank you, Ron. And I think it's a subject that is key not only to the region, but the rest of emerging markets. And there's no doubt that the pandemic has hurt poverty levels, has affected many sectors of economies, from education to healthcare, from economic activity across the board. But a lot of market participants are talking about a lost decade here going forward because of the pandemic. And it's important to exactly understand what a lost decade was in the 1980s, and to make sure that we understand that it's very different today than it was before. Today, we've seen structural changes within the emerging world and within Latin America. We've seen solvency, liquidity, inflation, competitiveness change, and we could touch base on some of those factors. But I'm very optimistic on the region on a forward-looking basis versus the GDP hits that we took back in the 1980s compared to the pandemic today.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the 80s, because we almost saw a complete meltdown in Latin America when Mexico threatened to default on its external debt. We saw currency and inflation problems in Latin and South America throughout that period, and a wide number of regime changes as well in almost every country there. So the predicate obviously is different, but there are some similarities today, I imagine, that you must admit.
So let's take a look back at where exactly the lost decade came from. And it came from the 1970s, and it came through two oil shocks. The first one in 1973 between the Arab-Israeli war, when you had a supply shock of U.S. oil into the U.S. Imposed by the Arab nations. We saw prices of oil quadruple throughout that period. In 1979, we had the Iranian Revolution, where much of the oil production from Iran collapsed throughout that period. And we also saw oil prices surge in 1970 to 1980. Actually, if you take a look at that seven-year period, the price of barrels of oil went from 290 to almost 40 cents on the dollar, a huge windfall into the Arab nations. And again, we saw many petrodollars go from the Arab nations into U.S. commercial banks, and then recycled in the form of loans into Latin America. Throughout that period, those loans were floating rate and in dollars when many of these countries were experiencing fixed exchange rate. So overall, a deadly combination when it comes to emerging markets. You mentioned political chaos. Absolutely. We had military dictatorships throughout that period. And then we started seeing hyperinflation as these economies overheated with all the amount of lending that they took in from all these petrodollars. The 1980s was the lost decade for EM, and rightfully so. We saw U.S. inflation rise at a very fast pace out the 1970s, peaked twice over double digits because of the oil shock. In came Paul Volcker and hiked rates aggressively, allowed monetary policy to really control inflation. But what happens when the value of your nominal yield fixed debt goes high? Well, overall, the value of the dollar increases at a very fast pace. We saw the dollar appreciate by 50% and rates move higher. Again, most of that debt for Latin America in the 1980s was dollar debt and floating rate, a deadly combination. And to your point, in 1982, the Mexican finance minister called the Fed, the IMF, and the U.S. Treasury, said, no mas, we can't make these payments. Shortly after, we had Argentina, Brazil, Venezuela default. And in fact, over 12 countries defaulted right after in the 1980s. Just to give you a sense of the amount of debt that was created throughout that period, in the early 1970s, over $29 billion were to the region. By 1982, we had over $350 billion into the region, while you had peak rates in the developed world, you had low growth, high oil prices, pretty much a very deadly combination. Very different what we are seeing today. Growth back then in the 1980s took a long time to recover for Latin America. We are seeing a V-shaped recovery in many countries in Latin America. In fact, Latin America is the one region that is outperforming growth expectations globally.
Now, is Latin America outperforming in local currency terms, or given the dollar's relative strength, have there also been questions about how Latin American investments would perform for U.S. investors as well?
Well, when I say outperforming, I mean outperforming on growth expectations. So we're seeing a V-shaped recovery in countries like Peru, Colombia, Brazil, Mexico has done pretty well. When you compare the region, for example, with Asia, where we're seeing headwinds in China, we're seeing Thailand, Malaysia, Vietnam, some of these countries not grow as fast as the pre-pandemic levels, we are seeing Latin America outperform. The dollar is stronger. We do have Fed taper coming due. We have Fed liftoff coming possibly in 2022, 2023. And when that happens, usually the dollar becomes more attractive. But we are seeing winners throughout the emerging world, especially those that are commodity exporters.
Yeah, let me ask you about that. I would imagine that even if Latin America is in considerably better shape today than it has been in prior decades, you still have to be selective with respect to where one might put his or her money. Is it an environment where you can't just make a blanket statement about Latin America at this juncture? You have to go country by country.
You have to go country by country, sector by sector. But overall, the region as a whole structurally has evolved over the last couple of decades. And I would start with solvency. When you look at short-term debt for these emerging economies in the 1980s, it peaked at 250%. Today is about 50%. So short-term debt is very low in comparison to prior history. Liquidity is ample in these particular countries. Brazil has over $370 billion in reserves. Mexico, over $200 billion in reserves. Peru, Colombia, Chile, over $50 billion in reserves. So they've been able to accumulate many dollars throughout this period because they allowed their currencies to free float, something that we've seen since the 1990s. But overall, liquidity is very ample. Inflation, yes, inflation is running hot in the region, but compared to the past where inflation was running over 300% in the 1980s, this time around, post-pandemic, we're seeing high single-digit inflation throughout the region. But overall, we're seeing monetary policy come in, be very aggressive. The Central Bank of Brazil has hiked, Colombia has hiked, Mexico has hiked, Peru has hiked, Chile has hiked. So they're responding the right way in front of the Fed, in front of the ECB, in front of the Bank of Japan. EM central banks are taking the lead. The region is also extremely competitive. We've seen FX depreciation happen at a very fast pace and outpace the rate of inflation. So overall, these currencies look very cheap. That means they're exports are also looking very cheap, and the balance of payments from many of these countries is improving as we move forward. And I will say domestic capital markets today is not only issuing in dollars or issuing in floating rate instruments. Today, many of these countries could issue domestically. In fact, Chile, domestic market is over 180% of GDP. That's followed by Brazil and Costa Rica, and many countries are following. So they have different resources to go ahead and issue that domestically, also offshore, into the capital markets.
What about the political environment? So we see President Bolsonaro of Brazil under pressure once again for a wide variety of reasons. And certainly, as you mentioned, they have plenty of foreign exchange reserves to buffer any economic shock. But you've also got Venezuela, which is still, to put it generously, in flux when it comes to its political situation. And Argentina kind of pops back and forth in whether it appears stable or less so on any given day. What do you make of the overall political environment, which, at least again, in our lifetime, has almost always been challenging?
Well, let's start with Mexico. And we've had AMLO here for over 3 years. We just had midterm elections, and his party actually lost a few seats throughout. But we've seen pretty good management by the AMLO administration. When you take a look at the fiscal numbers out of Mexico, they've been very steady throughout the pandemic. And the balance sheet of Mexico overall is one that we have not seen much impairment in. They actually benefit from a robust U.S. growth outlook. Brazil, absolutely. We have elections late next year. We have Lula on the wings, who's still pretty popular within Brazil. So Bolsonaro has a lot of work to do to be reelected. And therefore, we do expect Bolsonaro to spend more than what the market wants. And we're seeing some stress. The key factor here is the central bank. Can they hike aggressively and control inflation expectations? If the answer is yes, there's a lot of value being created in Brazil. If the answer is we need to wait and see if inflation actually peaks, because right now there is divergence between monetary policy and fiscal policy. We want to see convergence of monetary policy and fiscal policy throughout these countries. But overall, Brazil will be one of those markets that we will follow very closely, not be completely all in when it comes to Brazil. Pick your spots exactly where you want to be. The exporters that are benefiting from high energy prices, and also those that could benefit from domestic demand coming back. But overall, not just invest across the beta of Brazil. I think we have to wait and see how the election plays out. Argentina, in and out. We have midterm elections coming here in November. It seems that the current government will lose a few seats. And if that's the case, it seems like the mayor of Buenos Aires is becoming very popular. Potentially a change of the guard in 2023. Potentially an IMF deal in the first quarter. So yes, we had a moment where the stress on the government, the political stress in Argentina has peaked. And the question is, over the next 2 years, if they lose governability to some extent and a change in government in 2023, can we see a better outlook for Argentina? We have to wait and see. The inflation dynamic is still pretty poor there, but things are developing in the right place. Another country that also is going through an election year is Chile by the end of the year. And there we do believe it's going to be a pretty tight race in the second round. And the market is pretty undecided who might win. It seems like the left center candidate might edge a win here. And overall, the question would be, how much institutional erosion can we see in 2022? But if there's one country in the region that is single A, has strong institutions, and could go ahead manage a transition over the next couple of years, is Chile.
Now, do countries like Venezuela or El Salvador, which recently adopted Bitcoin as its currency, maybe to its benefit, maybe not, do these countries matter in the overall scheme of things? Or do you kind of, given that effectively Venezuela is still on the OFAC list and can't be invested in by U.S. citizens, or El Salvador is quite small, do you just kind of X those off the list and look at areas where there's just much more size, much more scale, and much more opportunity?
Venezuela absolutely matters. It matters maybe not from an investment perspective as part of an index where the value of the sovereign or the quasi-sovereign PDVSA is trading in single digits. But it matters to the overall region. We've seen many, many refugees go into countries like Colombia, Peru, and moving throughout the entire region. And overall, that's creating stress in the healthcare system, education, throughout many of these countries. So it's imperative over a long-term basis that Venezuela gets sorted out. They're losing a lot of talented people to other countries, and therefore affecting the overall dynamic of that particular country. But overall, Venezuela does matter, but more as a second derivative to the rest of the region. El Salvador, with President Bukele, we're so hopeful that he will engage the IMF, that we will have an IMF program with El Salvador. However, he has moved in a different direction in over the last couple of months, pretty much not agreeing to terms with the U.S., moving more authoritarian, and therefore something that we have to follow very closely. But El Salvador is very different than a country like Venezuela.
So in short, then, to put a final button on this conversation, you do not see necessarily that COVID-19 or any other factor at the moment will necessarily lead to another lost decade in Latin America.
Ron, we're seeing vaccination levels speed up at a very fast pace, reaching developed markets. We're seeing COVID cases collapse. We're seeing COVID deaths collapse. Mobility is coming back into the market. We're seeing growth expectations being revised upward for countries like Peru, Colombia, Mexico is doing pretty well. the structural changes that we've seen throughout the region are here to stay. Like I mentioned before, solvency, liquidity, inflation, competitiveness, domestic capital markets. South America is a big hydropower hub as well. We're seeing credit penetration throughout many countries, technology throughout the entire markets of Latin America also improving at a very nice pace. We're seeing mobile use, telephones being used more and more. Well, 100% of Chileans have access to broadband, 90% of Brazilians, and moving fast across the board of Latin America. And financial technology is improving, where many people don't have to walk to a bank. The bank comes to your phone, and that's going to lead to more productivity throughout the region. This time around, I hate to say it's different, but it is different. Structurally, we are different than we were for many years ago, and there's many opportunities opening up in Latin America.
Fernando, thanks for being with us. Appreciate you joining us today.
Ron, always a pleasure. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Fernando Grisales is Senior Portfolio Manager of EMD Americas, joining us from Schroders. I'm Ron Ansana. Great chatting. We'll catch up with you again in just a couple of weeks.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.